Hello guys, I'm Apex from G2 Esports, and now you're listening to The Centering.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello. Hello and welcome to another edition of The Centering, aka TCR, aka your favorite esports podcast. Some might say the same edition.
It's like Groundhog Day.
It really is.
The best episode since yesterday, I'll tell you that much.
This will be the best episode ever because we're doing it twice. Episode 144, coming to you live from an undisclosed location. The date, February 19th, 2019. The time, 9:08 p.m. Central Standard Time. Hello. My name is Tim. I'll be your captain for this journey into esports. Alongside me, as always, we have Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
Pretty good. And we got Brett. Hello, Brett.
Hey, what's up, guys? Long time no see.
Long time.
So let me tell everyone what to expect on the show in case this is their first time listening to it, if you're watching live, or maybe you listen to the podcast and you'll never know what happened yesterday. But we do have a show. We will discuss week one of Overwatch League. We will have e-news to end it all. Of course, that's our weekly segment of news that we just don't have time to get to. We're going to talk a little bit Apex Legends, give our input on the esports side of it. And we're going to talk a little CSGO with the Katowice Major as the stages are transitioning from Challenger stage to New Legend stage. We're going to get to that in just a minute. Before, make sure you follow us on Facebook. I guess we do have a Facebook page. If you look up the Center Ring.
We do. Yeah.
We do.
Yeah, it's there.
Me and Brett have tried putting our heads together to do something with it. We're really bad at Facebook.
We suck at Facebook.
I've never felt so much like an old man than trying to do something on Facebook. But it's there. So if that's your thing, go ahead and we'll start doing stuff with it. But we are on Twitter, at The Center Ring. Be sure and follow us. We know how to do that. We know how to tweet. That's very easy. So follow us on there, knowing all the updates. And if you do follow us on Twitter, you would have seen the tweet this morning saying that we recorded last night and we're redoing it. And sure enough, here we are, redoing the episode. For those watching live, we have partnered with Phantom. They are a group of guys who do more on the traditional side of esports, broadcasting everything on their Facebook. Watch Phantom. Go ahead and follow that.
Traditional sport. Hey.
Oh, what did I say?
Esports.
Oh. Yeah, they definitely don't do esports.
We do esports.
Great group of guys, but that's why they brought us, right? They brought us on to talk esports. So we're partnering with them, kind of spread the love of esports. So go ahead and follow them on Twitter as well, at Watch Esports, and on Facebook, which is their primary thing. They definitely understand Facebook. They got that thing down to a science. But that's besides the point, because I don't really think that has anything to do with the technical issues that we ran into yesterday. This is not the first time on the podcast that we've had to redo an entire episode. It was long before Brett and Anuj was here, though. Episode one, we had to do twice, because back then we recorded in my apartment, me and the old co-host Brandon, for those who might remember him. Rest in peace. Well, who knew that when the laptop went to sleep, it also stopped recording? I didn't know that. And that's exactly what happened with episode one of TCR. So, like, got 10 minutes worth, and then boop, boop. And afterwards, I woke up the laptop, and I was like, all right, wake up, laptop. Let me see what the recording is. And then I was like, we got to do that one again. Similar
enthusiasm changes.
Oh,
everything
man,
feels
so
different.
You can't replicate episode one, right? But I did. And fast forward to last night, Discord crashed in the middle of the show, which is how we record it now. We're all at each other's respective homes and record through the magic of Discord. Discord sometimes has issues. You know, sometimes you'll hear the robotic voice and everything. But normally it's not bad, right? It's for a second here and there, and we live with it. That's part of it. It's part of living in 2019 and technology, right? Well, last night it completely, like, died on us. So we restarted and didn't realize until post-production. Restarted twice, in fact. That it really just screwed up the audio completely in post-production. And we have a standard, I think, here at the Center Ring.
It's not high.
It's really not, but despite me being super picky with audio, we're not so, that, you know.
So bet on you, Discord. Unless you want to sponsor us, then that never happened.
Yeah, for real. Then it's definitely somebody else's fault. But long story short is we got together after the show and said, look, I know we have like 5 listeners, but they deserve better than that. So we're redoing the episode.
Always underselling us. Always.
Well, you don't want to oversell. You don't want to say you have like 10 listeners or something, because no one's going to believe that. No one's going to believe we have double digit listeners. That's maddening. That's mad talk right there. So let's look at the show. Let's get into some Katowice major talk, if you guys will entertain me for the second time. The new challenger stage just ended up wrapping up the other day. New legend stage is going to start tomorrow. In fact, by the time anyone's listening to this podcast, I think the stage starts up early our time, because obviously with the time difference and everything like that. So I do want to highlight just some of the teams that we will no longer see at the Katowice Major. I think we just start with the most obvious, Fnatic. Went 1-3, losing to some questionable teams, especially when you are Fnatic, who's been playing pretty hot, really, as of late going into it. You know, I think a lot of people expected more from Fnatic going in, being a lot of people's 3-0 pick. You know, Anuj, yourself had them as 3-0, correct?
Yeah, and I think most brackets, if they didn't have them at 3-0, I'd say 100% of brackets had them advancing. You know, so I don't think anybody had them on the loser's end. Prior to this tournament, they were ranked in the top 10. They dropped to 13 now. They dropped 7 spots. But, you know, they were coming in, playing well, fresh lineup. You know, you add Twist to the roster, Brawl into the roster, along with Exist from previous NIP rosters. So, yeah, definitely shocking. And not only that, but with the new seeding and the way it works out in this particular stage is you're seeded 1 to 16. 16 was the team that they played first, VC. Fnatic came in with the number one seed, lost to VC, went on to the second round, and you get reseeded. So again, like, they're handing you an opportunity against a, you know, not so great team. I believe they played Windstrike in the second round, and lost that one. So again, at that point, you knew the team was on the ropes, and they were never able to recover.
The only team they ended up defeating were Greyhounds, which was one of the 0-3 teams in the whole the stage. So not a whole lot to write home about for Fnatic. I don't know from a team standpoint, is this one that you just throw away and say, look, guys, it wasn't our best performance. I think they're never going to admit to it, obviously. I think they didn't come in with the right mindset. I think they went into the stage thinking it was their stage. Right, like they didn't really have to prep for it as much or what have you, because that's the only.
They had to feel really confident, yeah, for sure. They had to come in with a lot of confidence into the stage.
I understand anything can happen in a best of one. I totally get that, but to lose 16-9 against VC, and in their next round 16-11, not even close games, you know. So you really expected more from Fnatic. I just think it was a mental issue going into it. I think they were too cocky, yeah. And before they had time to turn around, it was already over.
I agree with you, Tim. Like, it just really feels like they kind of just made a pass on it, because you can look at the teams that moved on in the stage. I could pick out 3 really quick that Fnatic is most definitely head over heels better, or head and shoulders rather, better than. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that going on. Just under prep, kind of sliding through.
I think they look to possibly make a change. I don't think Exist is the best fit for this roster.
He's been bounced around so much.
He has been. There's, you know, there's kind of a reason for that, right? Like, yeah, if you haven't stuck to a couple of the teams that he's been on, you know, there's too much. Now they have a mix of young and older talent, but I don't know. I guess they might give this another run throughout the season, but I don't think we see this roster by the time the next major rolls around in Berlin. So yeah, that was definitely the biggest shocker of this round for sure.
I think I was going to bring up something that's not necessarily a shocker. I think it was just a matter of time before we saw this was Ty Lue not making it through. They started off strong. They beat Vitality and Cloud9. They started off the tournament 2-0. So they had full control of their destiny, and then they ended up losing 3 in a row to NRG, which we'll talk to about in a second, but they went 3-0. Avangar, which was kind of a surprise, and then G2, they lost in the best of 3. All 3 of those were actually best of 3s, right? So they had a really tough go. I know they started out 2-0, but really they had a really tough last year of the tournament.
They played against 5 teams that moved on to the next stage. You think they would have rather had Fnatic's, you know, team pool or, you know, like, you know, being able to play against those guys because they might have moved on, right?
Yeah.
It's just kind of unlucky. They're one of, and Tim, you've mentioned this in the past or most recent past. If you want to go back to this episode, you talked about the Swiss system and how there's always that one team that kind of gets screwed. And even in this format, there's a team that got screwed, and I feel like it's Ty Lue.
Yeah, and screwed is, you know, I guess relative here, because they did play G2 in that best of 3 at the end, right? They took a 1-0 lead on G2, so they were one map away from winning it, and G2, you know, didn't necessarily look good all tournament. They beat Vega barely at the beginning, lost to Ents and Avangard from there, and then beat Fnatic, who was struggling. So I thought they had a good chance of beating G2 in that last matchup. Again, Ty Lue is one of those teams. They've been together for a couple runs now. I think they have the right core. I think they're getting better. But they do have to find a way to come over this particular hurdle for them. And unfortunately, this wasn't it. But I thought the Chinese teams made a strong showing. You know, VC and Ty Lue both looked really good in the tournament. They played well. They beat quality teams and really made a name for themselves. So you're seeing some growth, you know, outside of Ty Lue, you know, in that scene, which I think is good.
And maybe that's something that Ty Lue needs. You know, you talk about growing or breaking out, you know, of something needs to change. I've mentioned it in the past that the issue with Ty Lue is that you just don't see them in other tournaments throughout the year. Maybe one or two here or there. I think they were at Summit. They might have been at CS Summit one time or something like that. Mm. But overall, that whole Oceanic side, you know, we've seen it with Renegades for the longest time, which is another more impressive reason on how Renegades have been able to stay so relevant throughout the organization's history, is because there's just not enough talent out there. There's really not. The comparison years ago was the reason NA was always so far behind EU was because it was too spread out, and the way NA teams are practicing, they're not practicing against the best teams, right? Because it's just throwing teams out here, for example, but it would be NRG practicing against Complexity. You know, how much better can you be if you're not practicing against better teams? And with EU, you had, like, for the longest time, the top 10 teams in the world could all practice against each other. And that's something that on the Oceanic side, like, you're, you know, to Anuja's point of these teams playing better, I mean, they can practice against Renegades. They can practice against VC. So I think it's only a matter of time till you start seeing more of these Oceanic teams break out. It's just on a consistent level, are you going to see them in other tournaments?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that really over here, it was Cloud9, Liquid, and SK Gaming, who whatever they were at the time, Luminosity, right? That was really kind of the top three teams in NA.
Are you forgetting CLG?
Sure, yeah, CLG as well, so that was good. They did have their run.
They had a good run.
They had their run. That was FNS's 200 IQ again right there. But yeah, they there just weren't that many teams in NA for them to get better against, and so you saw these teams making these international teams at some point to, like, grab a player here and there, pull in some talent from overseas to help their team out. Now you've seen that growth in the NA scene, and hopefully you start to see that on the Oceanic side. One area that, you know, I thought would be interesting to discuss was just the French teams right here. Both of them had an opportunity to advance and ended up advancing. I don't think any of us really believed heavily in both of them advancing. You know, you thought one would probably tank. We all probably had them in our pick 'em to advance, including myself, but I wasn't confident at all that G2 was going to make it through. I thought there was a good chance they would slip up and lose a game here and there, where Vitality is the team that I think a lot of us had more confidence in, and it really showed. They stepped up in this tournament. They played really well. Their only loss was to Ty Lue in the first round, so again, credit to Ty Lue there. But they came back with their next three teams. Again, not the toughest competition in their next three with Greyhound, Vega, and VC, but they looked really good in those games, and that was the important part. So looking forward to see what they're able to accomplish in the next round and see if we can have a French team, you know, make legend status.
We could talk a little quickly about these two teams because you brought up G2. I feel like G2 and Cloud9 had a very similar performance in this early stage, where I think the only reason they're going there is because they needed two other teams. I don't see either Cloud9 or G2 realistically making out of next stage. I felt like they barely got out of this stage. Cloud9
came out with a zero round differential, right? Like you talk about making it as close as possible. These guys came out with a zero round differential after playing in all five rounds. So their games really came down to the wire. Again, they took advantage of the teams that they should beat in Greyhound, Furia, and Windstrike. And then on the other end, they lost to both the Chinese teams. They lost to Ty Lue and they lost to VC respectively. So again, they didn't look great going into this. I probably honestly have more faith in Cloud9 in the next round than I do even G2. Because Cloud9, I think, is built with enough veteran talent to carry them through. Where G2, it's Kenny and Shox and then like everybody else.
And there's no Chinese teams in the next round. So Tim.
Yeah, so... TCR lock of the major, they're winning. There's no the only hope is they just got to avoid Renegades, keep the Oceanic side out of it. Well, and I think also too is the way Flusha performed really well. I think it suits to an attitude. You know, we've always mentioned it that G2 just kind of seems to have more of a poor attitude if they start off rough, so that could come into play. Now, this is one thing I don't think anyone had, and if you do, I'm going to just call you either a fanboy or you were just doing a bit. But to have either NRG or Renegades as 3-0 teams.
NRG doesn't surprise me. They honestly didn't nearly as much. They didn't, because their first team was against Windstrike, so you knew if they could make it through, you know, you're close at that point. I think NRG is... what, ranked number 5 or something, so they're getting a lot of respect, right? It wasn't an underdog story from NRG's side. I think that was another team that everyone really expected to advance. Their biggest downfall over years past has just not been performing on the big stage. Same thing with Renegades, but you know, with that being said, so Renegades was definitely the sleeper here. They have some young talent, Lazio, I'm not sure how you pronounce it exactly. One of the young stars on that team really stepped up in this tournament. And so exciting to see that they played well. I want to see how they carry this over against better talent from NRG side. They played Windstrike, VC, and Ty Lue. I want to see them against some top-tier European talent. Renegades was impressive because they played Avangard, Nip, and Ents and beat Ents 2-0. So
they earned it, yeah.
Yeah, they really, really pulled their weight. And some quick stats just before I know it, we want to move on to the next segment with these guys. But NRG's performance in this tournament, just to give you an idea, they were the top rated rated team in the tournament. They had the top two rated players in this tournament, with Breezy holding a 1.58, Ethan at a 1.36. And then I mentioned this yesterday, I want to mention it again just because it's so damn impressive. Breezy averaged over a kill around throughout their tournament span for the four games that they actually played in, which is an insane stat. So their top players were playing their best, and that's what you want to see at this time. Not getting carried by the random or everybody kind of, you know, it's nice that everybody's playing well, but you need your stars to be stars right now. And we're getting that from both of those teams. So exciting to see what they do going forward.
speaking of going forward, like I mentioned, the new Legend stage, it's starting tomorrow morning, actually, by the time most of the people listen to this episode via the podcast, matches probably would have already started. So we don't need to get into the specifics, but we can just kind of go through our predictions and use that as an excuse to talk about some of these teams.
I got a way we can do this here.
Okay.
So let's all go with our 3-0 picks here. We'll treat this like the Valve setup here. Yeah, okay. So who do you got for your 3-0 pick?
I'm going to... Cloud9 is my lock of the major. I don't think they're going to lose another round. I think they're going to clean the table. That being said, I think Liquid's going to be the 3-0. I think Liquid's going to go 3-0. Astralis, you know, Dupree has obviously family outside factors. His father passed away.
His father just passed away, yeah.
So I don't want to, like, analyze that as a reason why I don't think they're going to go 3-0.
But they're still kids, right? Like, these guys are still kids.
It's huge. I mean, a parent passing is... And you know what? Everyone's different, right? Maybe getting to the major is exactly what he needs, and when he's in the zone, you know, you always hear that about professional athletes. It's like their parents pass away, then they go play a football game and have the game of their lives, right?
Brett Favre throwing 7 touchdowns or whatever the heck it was,
right? Yeah. I mean, it can easily insane. Use it as motivation, as easily as someone can say it's going to hurt them. But that being said, that is enough for me to give Team Liquid the upper hand to go 3-0.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Give me Astralis. I mean, I feel like that team with Zonic and that organization, really, they put those players in just the best situation. Like with sports psychologists, you got your coach is the best in the game, and they're going up against complexity first, which also helps as kind of a confidence booster. You know, Liquid is playing against Amigar, who was pretty surprising in the last round, so. I'm going to go ahead and go with my no-brainer and Astralis because they're just awesome.
Yeah, I got complexity. Give me complexity.
No. Yeah. No, you said it. No. Sure.
No, I'm actually going to piggyback on Tim with this. So I'm also going to take Liquid as my 3-0 team here for a couple different reasons. Definitely excited for this lineup with Liquid. I'm happy that Stewie is on this team. I think he is... exactly what this team needed, because you have so much structure and Stewie has a good loose play style, so I think he can go back to being who he was when we loved him in Cloud9. I think you'll get the best out of him in this tournament, so I want to take Liquid with my 3-0. The reason I'm not going with Astralis here for the most part is I do think the game is a little bit different than the last time they've played it. The AUG meta is now in. The smoke bug, although every team used it, I think Astralis was smart enough to use it the most effective because they use their utility properly. So that's a credit to them for just being badass at what you do, right? Like using your utility to the best way as possible. And then they're able to take advantage of that. I think it'll hurt a lot of teams. I just think Astralis was really good at it. So the AUG meta, the change in play style that you're going to see. And then again, as Tim mentioned, you know, Dupree going through such a tough, you know, sad personal situation. All of that makes me think that maybe they falter and lose a game. Do I think they're going to win the major? I think there's still a damn good chance that they win this major, but maybe they have a slip up. If they're going to have one, I think it could happen early. Who do you guys, your 0-3? Can we just go across the board? Say the name.
Complexity.
Timmy? Yeah. Brett? Complexity.
Okay. So we all got complexity. Jason, if you're listening, we're very sorry. We love you guys. This is a tough as hell bracket. So look,
if we can say one thing, we're not biased. We don't have hometown bias here.
Yeah, because you look at this bracket and like every single team there is legit and belongs there. So
and they do too. So I'm not saying Complexity doesn't belong there. Complexity played amazing to get into this position. And in fact, that they don't have to go through the open qualifiers next time around is fantastic. It's awesome, but they are the weakest link right now and out of this whole 16 team crew. So I think it'd be tough for them to pull out a game. Any big upsets y'all see?
I want to ask you a question then on one of your points. Mm-hmm. Cause you're right. They did play amazing back in September at the London major to qualify for this and get through open trials or open qualifiers.
Since it's not been the same.
If they had to go through open qualifiers, do you think they would be here?
No, I don't. I mean, there's no way. Not with the way they're playing right now. There was not a chance with the way they're playing right now. They've made roster changes since then, so you're not going to see the same lineup right now. But they've just played so poorly. So I think nothing has to really step up in his role. I think this is kind of going to be his last hurrah, like we see with Dirk and Dwayne Wade at this point. This is going to be his going out party, I think. Will he step up? I really don't know, because he just hasn't been playing a ton of CS. And then Rike, the other Australian player that they've added, I think he's a great player. I really do. So I think they've added really good pieces to this lineup, but they haven't done enough recently to make us believe.
So there's always a complexity, though, of every major, right? There's always a win strike. There's always I think Vega one time, right? There's always that team, that eighth legend spot where you never expected them to make legend, right? Always seems to be at least one where everyone's like, damn, they just had a good tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you see that being this time around? I can give you mine.
Go.
I think Ents. I think Ents will be that team that makes top eight. They make new legends, and we'll see them again next major.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. The way they've been playing, it's hard to pick against them. Now we're going to see them against the best in the world, so this is really their chance to prove it. I kind of got two in mind, because one doesn't feel like a Cinderella, but kind of like we just talked about him last round, being NRG. I know they're a highly ranked team. This is also the best of the best here. So if they advance and make a legend spot, I think that would still be considered really big, even though they're ranked really high. But on the other end, this is going to sound odd, but I think NIP has a good chance as well. And I do think they're an underdog right now. And I think they've found a way to hopefully thrive in this role. I saw Get Right play old school Get Right ways. I saw Forrest carrying the team on his back at times. So I think they have a chance to also pull through in top eight, partially because I think we see teams like Complexity, Big, Hellraisers. I think these are three teams that are current legends that lose that legend status. So there's a little bit of wiggle room. A couple of teams are going to be able to slide in here. And I think they have a great chance to do it.
Yeah. All right.
And yep.
Do you have one, Brett?
Well,
give us your last thoughts, and then we'll
all right,
move on
so
to Apex.
I'm not gonna talk about it. Maybe a team that is gonna be surprising going forward, but someone that may be interesting at the start. Look at G2. I mean, if you look at Na'Vi just recently, they've been playing against teams that are in this legend stage and haven't really fared well. They've been about 50-50, right? So if G2 can squeak a game out against Na'Vi, they're kind of not up there at the top, but they're kind of maybe like closer to the middle of that that Swiss bracket. So they may go up maybe against a favorable team the next round if there's an upset there. So maybe G2's
out there,
a team to look at.
One French team will advance in this stage. I think it'll be Vitality, but one French team will advance.
I don't think it's going to be G2, but it would be interesting if they win against Na'Vi that hasn't really been playing well lately.
That could be your first. Yeah, that could be a potential first round upset. But other than that, I mean, this is a really, really solid new legend stage. This is a really solid top six team. Like, none of these matches, I feel like, are going to not be entertaining. You know, the first one with Astralis and Complexity might, but you also have that potential of it, like we said, for all the other factors with Astralis, you know, from patches that have gone into the game and everything outside. You could see an upset there.
For those of you longtime Counter-Strike fans, this is the real major, right? This is where it starts.
Yeah.
So
this is where in the past, the major always had, you know, this
these were
was
your sticker
the major.
Teams.
This is what we would preview on our major episode. So this is really what you get excited for.
For sure.
Realistically, the last stage never would have been mentioned because you had some bottom of the barrel teams. Good. So that starts again probably in a handful of hours tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
So listen to this.
6 a.m. or something.
Listen to this on your way to work, and it will sound a lot better as opposed to listening it on the way home. But either way, I appreciate you listening. I do want to talk about Apex Legends, though. Just take 5 or 10 minutes to give our thoughts on it. Obviously, we've all played it. We love it. It's a fast-paced game. It's a first-person shooter. It's everything that we enjoy. There's no crafting in it. You know, it's a very competitive style of shooter, and it's a BR. Twitch has ran a handful of tournaments. They've done, I think they even did a Twitch rival today. I didn't get a chance to watch any of it, but they've ran
it's on
a handful.
Right now.
Oh, it's still going.
Yeah, it's still going.
Jeez, those things are long. So you have they're doing Twitch rival tournaments, which is, you know, very little thought into the format and everything. So base it off of the actual skill that's
it's
going
streamers
on.
Streamers for the most part
it's
that
streamers,
are
right.
competing in this. Yeah.
And then you had Code Red. They did their thing again. It's a streamer tournament, so take it with a grain of salt. I'm not talking about from production standpoint or anything like that. But
this is just more about, is this game a game that we see that has an esports future?
Because the fact that there are already three tournaments in a span of a week, whether it be streamer tournaments or not, shows that there is interest in an esports element to it.
For sure, yeah.
Obviously, every game has that now. But even you have organizations already signing players for Apex before anything has even been announced.
NRG won both the tournaments so far, technically, if right? you look at who they had. So they except have, for Ninja. Ninja was on both of the teams.
King Richards and what's the other guy that's been blowing it up for them?
Drizzy.
Drizzy.
Dizzy.
Dizzy.
Yeah,
Drizzy. Dizzy, whatever Dizzy. His name is. Dizzy. Unreal. Dizzy. That dude's unreal.
He's insane.
It'll be exciting to watch. But more toward the point of, do we think this is going to work out as an esport? I will say this. There has not been, and yes, I understand this is subjective, there has not been a BR game to be a true esports success story. I understand PUBG has its own league, and it's doing fine. I get that. But I'm talking breaking out to the mainstream esports crowd.
Yeah.
It felt like PUBG was almost there. Almost. I mean, they had that giant stage at DreamHack Austin last year, and it looked amazing. It drew in the crowds. People were interested, but just there was something always missing about it. And then,
well, and then Fortnite came in with the Kool-Aid Man idea there and just blew through PUBG's wall.
Exactly.
Granted, a lot of it's a different audience, but the casual players right. have all left that game and gone to Fortnite.
And Fortnite's another one. Where
well, they just never have like dedicated themselves mm-hmm. to like being an esport, which blows my mind.
It hasn't taken that step. And Epic seems yeah. to be okay with that, though. That's the weird thing is you had organizations signing players, you know, and then they just let them go because it was kind of like, well, we basically hired on a glorified streamer at this point because there's just not anything dedicated in Fortnite. And that's, again, that's okay. I do want to make a point that it's like every game, it's almost like if it's not a successful esport, it's not a successful game. That is not what I'm saying.
Well,
I
yeah,
understand.
Can't say that with Fortnite at all.
Right.
Fortnite
has
the
most made
popular
billions.
Game of all time at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
But and it's okay that Epic isn't focusing on an esports competitive scene. They have their own little skirmishes and everything, and that works. But that still means that there is a spot for BR in the mainstream esports cycle. You know, I'm talking up there with Counter-Strike and Dota and Overwatch League, somewhere along those
something
brands.
That has a long-term continuous success, mm-hmm. right? We haven't seen that's what we've lacked with the BR games is the turnover ratio from H1 to PUBG to Fortnite to Realm Royale to whatever, and now we have Apex. And you know, to answer your question, I 100% think that this game has a future in esports, assuming that EA and Respawn continue to keep the game active in the sense of this is almost feels like a BR game with the mix of a MOBA or hero class style game. In these games, what tends to keep them active is adding characters, possibly keeping map pools and all that, you know, available, not just one stagnant map, but the two things, and we brought it up yesterday, is going to be this game has fantastic gunplay. The gunplay in Apex feels so good, so natural. Recoil system being implemented. It's a, you know, a true shooter first kind of game. And you don't have that in a lot of other BRs. Fortnite's a building game. PUBG is a camping game. H1 was just too early to be really good at anything. So I think the
H1
aspect
had
of,
to sacrifice themselves so we could have what we have today.
They did.
I feel like
we can kind of build off of that. I feel like Apex is kind of coming in at the right time. Like, they benefited from watching all these other BR games and how they function and work, and they just kind of made that better. I feel like three is the perfect squad size. With PUBG, you have four people in your squad. You know, three people go down, you're not going to win a 1v3 or 1v4. You're just not. It's not going to happen, no matter how good you are. In Apex, I feel like you have that opportunity because, like Anoush said, the gunplay is smooth. You have your abilities that can kind of give you an edge and a flanking part. FPS. And
yeah,
and the map size is perfect. I mean, the games take a maximum of like 20 minutes. So you're going to see several different matches in one given session. Which gives you a little bit of variety and doesn't feel like a grind. Because in PUBG, I feel like those games took forever. And I mean, it's just like I said, I mean, it just builds off of what the other BR games did and did it better. You don't feel like you're chasing a circle constantly.
Yeah.
Unless you're just not paying attention.
The circle is not your enemy in this game. The players are the enemy in this game. And, you know, With the second point on this is the clutch factor in this game, right? This game has an ability to have either the clutch factor or a superstar carrying a team. And I kind of lump those in to the same thing because I think it takes one to really do the other, right? It takes a superstar to be able to make clutch strike.
I mean, you can name Stewie, Simple, Nico, Cole Zera.
You know, there's stars. The game has stars. This game has the ability to have stars, which ties into the clutch factor. I don't think endgame and BRs have been the worst part of the game. You think about it again with PUBG, it becomes a pure camp fest, right? People hide out, you wait for somebody to show themselves, better have a sniper and some sort of long scope to be competitive in endgame PUBG. Same thing in Fortnite, endgame becomes a building race, and it's not even fighting
the
circle.
In today's Fortnite too, it's really any fight turns into a building race, which I get that's part of the game and that's some people's appeal to it. But again, from a spectator's point of view, it kills momentum.
You can't keep up with it endgame building because they just are stacking builds on top of each other, trying to stay in the circle. Again, the circle is the opponent in that situation more so than the opposing player. You don't have that in Apex. Endgame,
I can't even tell you what
fantastic.
The final circle looks like in Apex because people play so aggressive in it comparatively to the other games. You know, I think
you're fighting it out throughout the game. Mm-hmm. And again, the fights are gunplay fights. So for the viewer, it's easier to watch. And I think it's more exciting to watch. So for those reasons, I truly believe this game has a fantastic future. Again, they got the money with EA. I just think it's in a really, really good spot right now.
I will say this. It's not perfect, though. There are still things that, like, you know, you said it, Nuge. They have to still, don't just drop it and then be like, we're good, guys. We got 2 million.
We did a great job.
Like, good job, everyone. Pat yourself on the back. Because you still need to look at the longevity aspect of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's a free-to-play game. We've learned that is a dangerous formula for other games, right? Look at Fortnite, how it dominated the scene. Now Apex is dominating the scene. I think that might be a new model, right, for games is free to play, for better or for worse. They got to release more maps. You know, no BR game really has a map pool. You know, PUBG's got three maps and one's exceptionally smaller and everything,
but so much later into that cycle of the game, right? Like, the game was already limping and then they're like, okay, now we better do this. Do it ahead of time, get out in front, have multiple maps. You have a lot of this stuff from Titanfall 2. They can do it, right? So it's just a matter of, do they want to kind of cross that barrier to something that most BRs don't do?
So learn from other BR's mistakes. Be proactive, not reactionary.
And new gun coming out tomorrow. So that's exciting. You'll already see something new added to the game in 2 weeks in. And last thing, you know, on this is they have their year one schedule is already available for people to go see, to see what they have planned. And every few months they have multiple players coming out, like new characters, new weapons. And they said, and more. So we are hoping that more is, you know, maps. Maybe maps trickled in
And I don't even care. I know some people complain that they don't have like solo mode or duo mode. I really don't even care about that because I feel like the other thing that this has going for it, which we haven't even mentioned on either show, and we've done the show twice.
I know where this is going. This is a good one, actually. It's important.
The communication system in the game is
fantastic.
It's revolutionary for a BR game. In all other games, you joined up solo in squads or something. No one has mics. No, there's no way just to communicate with someone. This, it's a simple one button does all. You click on ammo, it pings it for people, tells you ammo's there. You click on a gun, it pings it for you, tells you a gun there.
You click on a location.
Yeah, click on a location. Hey, I'm going to go this way. I have not played one game with randoms that realistically the random just plays on his own. It's always been a good community experience in my playing. And when that,
which
and
getting that now huge. Is hard. Like getting a good community feel with randoms really doesn't happen in games anymore. And this one simple idea and made it great.
I'm really, really looking forward to the future of Apex Legends. And that's coming from a guy who gets very, very salty with BR games. So
who's a pessimist when it comes to BR games.
Yeah, I admittingly so. I don't like the RNG factor involved with it. And I think that's a very big component to esports. I wish there wasn't nearly as many attachments. And I will say that about Apex, right? I feel like if there was one less level of attachments, just make it like level 1 and level 2. You know, I feel like some of the guns play completely different if you have it all attached out compared to none. Which I get that that's their point. My point is, though, you know,
Tim wants less RNG in these games.
Shame on me for not opening up a chest and getting, you know, a sick attachment or a scope, or shame on me for opening up an airdrop that didn't have the legendary sniper and this guy's did, right? I guess that's my fault.
Just kill the player that has it and go get it.
Easier said than done.
Just be better and go kill him.
Just be better.
That's it.
So again, though, that's not just on Apex. That's my beef with BR games in general and why I think they are held back a lot in esports. The difference for me where Apex sits is I can definitely see the skill based side of it. You know, I can see the gunfights and everything, and it just plays different for whatever reason.
And we'll come back to this in a month or so once they start releasing content.
When we see like the first real tournament, now this will not be the last time we talk about Apex. You know, I really do feel like, you know, and what's the company behind it, Respawn?
It's Respawn and EA. So okay. EA is the backing, right? They have the money
to
make this good. Yeah.
And they're Respawn is the
developers.
I think that's how it works.
Yeah.
And that's one thing to say too, right? Is you have a good developer behind the game because they made Titanfall, which was never the most popular. It was never the bell of the ball, you know? But
it's a really good game.
It was a really good game, but EA, this is a whole nother rant, but EA released it on the same day as Battlefield 1, which created a whole issue internally, and no one played Titanfall 2, but that's besides the point. It does show that the developers care about their products. You know, I don't think they're just going to make it type of a money grab or anything like that. And if you do play it, link your EA account to Twitch Prime today and you can get a Pathfinder skin.
And five free chests. So.
And five free chests.
There you go.
So if you never play Pathfinder like me, you can get the chest. So Apex Legends, awesome game. Not going to be the last we talk about it. But we do need to move on because it was the first week of Overwatch League season dose. And my God, what a first week it was. We went to the Dallas Fuel watch party on Friday. Met a bunch of listeners there. So that was always fun to get out into our local Dallas scene. I will always say this. If you have a local scene for esports in your community, message us on Twitter and we would love to get the word out, because ultimately that's why we're doing the show, is to spread the love of esports. But we went out there. It's crazy to see how these have grown. Last year, Brett, we went to almost all the watching parties. They were in bars. They were at main event. All full, but still on a smaller scale. This was at the esports stadium in Arlington with upwards to 800, 900 people.
1,000
and it was
seats
full.
Yeah, 1,000 seats, and it was packed.
For a watch party, dude. With
for a watch
no
party.
Players
no
there.
Players, no nothing. Yeah,
that's insane.
And yeah, it was a great week for Overwatch. I mean, for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, viewership was up there, which is nice to see at the start of the season.
You didn't
there's
see
interest
a dip
there
or anything, which I think was a lot of.
Dip, yeah.
I think that was a big focus point for a lot of people. Is okay. Mm-hmm. How is this going to carry over? Is that hype going to stay? And people say that the player base for Overwatch has dropped off. I don't know how true that is, you know. Or is it dropping off like with how people say, well, the player base in Fortnite's dropped off since Apex? It's like, okay, so what? Did it go from like 20 million to 18 million? You know, like what numbers are we looking at? So yeah, the viewership was great. I think I saw it peak around like 250,000, which is kind of where we projected it to be just around. Mm-hmm. You did see, and that kind of carried through, even like with the two Chinese matchups, right? If two Chinese teams were playing, I think it still floated around 100,000.
More than that.
Okay, so even a little more. What were some of the things that stood out to you then, Brett, for just overall in this first week, and then we can get to more specifics?
That the meta could be interesting. A big worry for a lot of people was that it was going to be that standard 3-3 ghost that you see a lot of your favorite streamers playing in pug matches. Not the case. And I'm glad that pro teams, you know, we this is the first time we've seen pro teams and they're adjusting. So in this first week of Overwatch, we saw kind of offsets of goats. I mean, it's still, you still have your tank lineup, but it's that 2-3-1 with a DPS kind of thrown in there to kind of, you know, shake things up and alter things a little bit. You saw it in, with our local team, the Dallas Fuel, with AKM kind of popping off there on Sombra. So, I mean, that's exciting. I mean, it adds a little bit of an element for maybe the casual fan that doesn't like to see a whole lot of healing and a whole lot of tanking shots. You saw some skills, some exciting play. You saw your MVP, well, who I think the MVP of the league is going to be in Carpe, kind of just slap the league in its face with his just massive player pool. A big worry going in was that, hey, these star players like Carpe, you know,
Effects,
you know, Effect and all them, are they going to be nerfed by this current meta? And it was great to see Carpe kind of out there doing his thing with Diffusion being 2-0. But yeah, I mean, that was the biggest takeaway for me, is that the meta could actually be exciting this year. And we've brought this up in previous episodes. Is it going to be watchable? I mean, I'm going to watch it because I just love Overwatch. But, you know, for that casual fan, it is. I mean, at least with week one, you know, there, I really don't like to kind of gauge Overwatch until about maybe 6 to 8 games in. That's when you know what the meta is going to be, because there's going to be a team out there like the Fusion or like NYXL that's going to kind of set that meta, right? As the top team.
Yeah, because already you're seeing teams that you wouldn't expect. And keep in mind, teams have played no more than 2 games. Some have only played 1, right?
1, yeah.
So, I mean, like, LA Valiant are 0-1. Okay, they've lost. London Spitfire is 0-2. Though that is not going to stick. No. This is still very early on. We did see some of the newer teams, though, really look good. Vancouver Titans, which is a team that we said keep an eye out for because they were the entire runaway roster from the Contenders League. Paris played really well. That was another one that we kind of said, hey, yeah, these are expansion teams, but you know, the players that they picked up are pretty damn good players. So they went 0-1.
And a team out there that I thought was interesting, they were kind of a sleeper pick in our previous, you know, preview episode of the Overwatch League, is the Atlanta Reign. With Defran kind of also throwing the meta on its head, playing Torb and dominating with them too. You know, they 4-0'd, who did they 4-0? Mayhem. They brought it really close to a team that I think is going to be the best. Well, I mean, the first 2 games, they look like the best team in the league. in the Fusion. I mean, like I said, that can change, but they lost 3-2 against that team. So mm-hmm.
And Fusion
it's
had
exciting
to
see. Right, and Fusion had to come back, and it's exciting to see the parity. There's not just one team out there that's looking just extremely dominant. It looks like it's going to be just an overall competitive season. I mean, I can maybe throw two teams out there right now that it's going to be a bad year for you, buddy. It's not going to get any better. In the Justice and the Shanghai Dragons. Yeah. So.
Yeah, they're still looking pretty rough there. Houston is looking. I will say, out of teams that have been 0-2, Houston also looks pretty rough. I think they'll turn it around. They have the players to turn it around, but they did look rough. They look like the meta was not in their favor.
Yeah, and I brought this up in the preview episode. I felt like they really missed an opportunity in the offseason to pick up another tank. And I feel like they kind of screwed themselves in this current meta in not going out there and getting depth there. I guess maybe their one shining point that they can kind of look forward to if the meta stays to 2-3-1 is Linxer. He actually looked good at DPS. I know in the previous season he was kind of inconsistent.
Yeah, he's inconsistent.
But this year he looks like he's taken that step forward, so that's good for him. But I agree.
Take a minute to talk.
Isn't
about
that kind of what happened
team?
To Dallas? Well, I was going to say, isn't that what happened with Dallas last year, essentially, is the meta kind of changed before the season started and they just never really adapted to what happened in the first two stages there?
And if you want to look at it, Anuj, I mean, that started out the season that way, was adjusting. Because against the San Francisco Shock, they did not adjust well. It just seemed like they kind of forced effect out there and they were like, hey, you're back. Go out there and be our best player. And to their detriment, It wasn't good for him.
He got so much hate. His dad put a letter out today. Did you see that?
Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate.
I don't understand the Korean scene. Because even after Sunday night's win, Effect posted something on Twitter talking about the hate. And from what I understand, it's on the Korean side. Like, the Korean message boards are ruthless.
That's kind of odd. I mean,
don't worry, we can be too. Really,
yeah, we can be. We can.
I mean,
be
I'm
toxic.
Not saying we're Peter.
Have you been to HLTV before?
they're European, sir. They're not like us nice Americans.
for our Dallas Fuel fans, listeners, you have something to look forward to because in that next game they did adjust. Effect played half of the maps. Zachary actually looked really, really good. I would like to see Mickey kind of thrown in there to see what he can bring to the table. But the supports kind of position. I hope it does though,
dude,
because
this is
he had a really good end of stage one, and I would just like to see
where
he
fits though with this roster. The way they played Friday night, the way they just had such little adjustments, even from the coaching standpoint. And I'm going to give the coaching staff a little grief for Friday. They should have been switching out players a lot more than what they were, putting the veterans on stage. I don't think you need to have your rookies out there on all four maps, especially when the season or the game was done.
I will say this, Tim. If the next game AKM shows that he can kind of be that flex superstar that he was against the Dynasty, I feel like that could eat into any potential time that Mickey could have because... Mickey is your Brigetta kind of flex player and off-tank specialist. I mean, he can play all the off-tanks. But AKM, we saw in that last game, he was playing Sombra. He switches to Zarya, stays fully charged, which is extremely important just watching Overwatch in this current meta, is just having a smart Zarya player. And AKM kind of single-handedly won that game against the Dynasty because of his Zarya
play. Not
to mention
his 3K on King's Row as Widow. Right, so not
that was
only
like the play of week one, wasn't it?
So, Tim, I see your point. I can see a scenario where Mickey doesn't get thrown in there. Maybe I'm just being a little bit of a fanboy because I love Mickey and I love the way he played at the end of stage one. But I mean, the Fuel have a good problem on their hands.
I think so. You're seeing with Mickey's situation is he's going to ride the bench for most of the season. They're going to use him as a fan favorite. They're going to use him as an ambassador and then throw him in there when a player needs a break, you know? Cause, and that was a thing that the league said they wanted teams to do, right? That's why they forced every team to have at least 8 members. So you could have, you know, that sub just to come in for a rest. You know, it's not even that, hey, this guy's playing poorly. It's just, hey, this guy has... Because you got to think, too, is it's not only that they're playing for that weekend, they're scrimming and practicing throughout the week. So if they're not, if you're telling a player, hey, man, this is your bye day, right? Then they maybe can take a day off to practice, get that mental, you know, that go see the team psychologist, whatever. Take that mental day off. And I think that's where Mickey can come into play.
And a lot of these teams are, I mean, a lot of these players, they're playing like 12 hours of Overwatch a day, like 10 to 12 hours. It's insane.
I was thinking about that the other day. And we can use Overwatch League as a kind of a loose connection to this. Is like, that's what these guys do for fun. You know, yeah, they also play this competitively, but in their free time, they also play Overwatch. Where in professional sports, like with football or hockey or anything like that, you don't have the case there. You know, it's kind of weird that for football players, you're really only playing football during the season and training camp. But in the off season, you might go as a receiver and go catch some balls and stuff like that, but you're not playing real football in the off season. So you don't have that same burnout mentality where these guys, well, I saw Taimu streaming Sunday night after their match, and I'm like, bro, take the night off. Like,
unless I'm
chill.
Unless you follow Zachary's Twitter, and that guy just seems salty all the time.
He's also 18. Who isn't salty at 18? But overall, a very, very entertaining first week. I agree with you. I think it was fascinating to see all the hero picks and the meta not being as stale as I feared. You saw Symmetra being played for the first time, as Sure4 Pictor being the first. I didn't know that. I did not know in all of season one, no one picked Symmetra and did any damage with her.
What?
That's insane.
The first player in Overwatch League history to pick Symmetra and do damage with her.
See, I would have done that just so I could have been in the record books.
Right?
Like, just so I could have a record. I've been like, yeah, sure. This is my
name's
going
to be in the book for something.
Yeah, for something.
And that's something I feared, right? Because I know, Anuj, you're more of the headshot kind of guy, and I am myself, right? So I feared the GOAT meta just being so drastically, you know, dangerously boring to watch. It wasn't always your traditional GOAT meta. They did modify it. And even when it was the traditional GOAT meta, compared to like our games that we play, where there's not a whole lot of teamwork or communication going on in a pug room, it's not that typical death ball, right, that you see in a pug where it's just teams overpowering the others. When the pros are using it, you really want to, like, I would, Taimu from the Dallas Fuel, I'm sure he posted it on YouTube, but he's good to watch on Twitch because at night he will sit there and break down film and explain things like with the official like app they use to strategize stuff. And he'll go over the GOATS meta and how it's supposed to work. And the way the pros think about it, dude, it is such a chess match on to bait people out of their ults and push this person forward. And if the Zenyatta is the least bit out of position, how it all falls apart, right? You don't realize how many moving parts there is to the GOAT meta. And watching the pro teams play, I can definitely appreciate it a lot more.
So my thought on that meta was never that it's not a strategic meta, right? Like, I understand there's a lot more strategy that goes, you know, behind why they're doing what they're doing than I'll ever know in that game. My concern with the GOATS meta is just viewership friendly. It does get a little crowded, and it's very like everyone's kind of in this tight, compact ball, and a lot is just happening in front of you. So as a casual fan of the game, and I know the game well enough to know all the characters, know all the maps, right? It's not like I don't know anything about Overwatch. But it was a little bit more difficult in that sense with how that play style is. So for that reason, I would prefer to see more your hit scan DPS out there. They're just easier when you show me what they're doing. It's like, I understand what's happening right now versus the chaos, the controlled chaos that's going on in the current meta at times.
Well, good for you, Anuj. It looks like you will get what you want, my man, or at least a little bit of it.
I want to see the Ashes, the Widowmakers, the McCrees.
Well, if you watch the Dynasty, Fleta was using Ash.
Yeah,
in the first game that they played, not against Fuel, I don't think.
And like I said, I'm glad to see that it's not just this straight 3-3 meta that we're currently seeing. Sorry.
Did your echo go off?
Whoa, God, you're so aggressive.
You know, she has feelings too. My gosh. Robots have feelings. I loved the fact that it wasn't so cookie cutter this season. And I think with 20 teams, that's a bigger factor, right? I think with 20 teams, you got more teams, more players strategizing, more people wanting to do their own style to try to get it to work for them.
More creativity is naturally going to come from more players, right? More players, more coaches, more eyes on it. Like, you hope to see that.
Yep. So, looking forward to it. Obviously, we're going to talk about Overwatch League, I can almost say every episode, maybe. But either way, definitely looking forward to it. And if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, definitely keep an eye out on our Twitter, because we go to pretty much every watching party there is for the Dallas Fuel. So we can always meet up at events and love to say, hey, I don't even know what the matches are for this week. I haven't even looked at it yet, but
we'll worry about that. A lot of teams are playing a lot of teams.
Yeah, games are being played on
Games are being played. It's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see. Let's get into some e-news, though, sponsored by Spaceman Company. You can follow them on Twitter, and I encourage you do so. At Spaceman Company, they design clothing for esportsers. Good dudes, we know them. They're very nice. They've been nice to us. So go ahead and give them a follow. Buy a shirt. Tell them TCR sent you.
We gave them a buy one get one free with 2 episodes in 2 days.
Yeah, that's right. For people watching live, anyways. In Overwatch, XQC. That's right. XQC signed with the Gladiators Legion. That is the Gladiators Contenders team.
Yeah, just insane how many chances this guy gets year in and year out. But, I mean, it was calculated by the Gladiators. Ultimately, I think they're using him as a streamer. And like Anuj mentioned last episode, it keeps him in the country. So, yay.
Yeah,
he gets
there's a lot of factors on why they did it. It's the safest signing I think they'll do because it's their contenders team, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be banned nearly as much. And what do they have to lose, right? They gain a lot of fans from it.
Like, this is the best XQC news we've said in over a year. So good for him to have a little positive spin on it. I thought we were going to say something about him checking into a facility or whatnot. but this is definitely a plus for him. And I think for them, they get a fan base that probably wasn't following him before.
That they may not want.
I can promise you no one was really following the Gladiators Contenders team.
They're a lovely fan base.
And that's no He's shot at the Contenders movie. Legendary team. That's more so as a shot of how Blizzard
cares
about the Contenders League.
So. Yeah.
In Call of Duty, the World League was teased that they will soon be getting franchises like the Overwatch League. And in fact, Overwatch League team owners will get first dibs. This was also taken back and they said, well, maybe not. Maybe we won't do this. It's not official. I can tell you.
Tell FaZe no. You don't get a spot. We're filled.
I can tell you from a reliable source that it is official. It is happening. They're doing franchises. We're gonna save this. This is e-news today because that's really all there is to it, right? They announced it on their yearly profit call. But we will revisit this when more details come out because this is not the same as Overwatch League doing franchises. This is an established fan base, an established player base with orgs that have been in here since the beginning. And some of these orgs don't have teams in Overwatch League, right? Like Anuj said, FaZe. And even if they did...
How many of these orgs are going to want to pay whatever fee they're about to charge for COD, right?
And you're ruining the Cinderella story of how any team can join in these tournaments now.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Have a contenders league?
Pros,
for Call
I think,
of Duty?
Would like it better. Don't you think?
Oh,
don't you think pros would like it better?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Because with a franchise, Overwatch has a salary cap.
Yeah, or but like I don't. There's not many COD players.
The top tier players not making a whole lot. I don't really know.
No. And I'm not saying. I think there's just the top handful of players make a lot of money in COD. And then there's a ton of average salaries. You know,
the
even
one percenters.
I don't know which way you're pointing.
All of our webcams are different. You can't do the pointing thing because we all have different setups.
So, yeah, I think this will benefit the players for two reasons. A, I think player salaries are going to go up from where they're at on an average level. I think it'll hurt some players, but help majority of players. Where I think they'll really like it is the way that these systems are set up for COD right now is they have to go through a million open matches and play all these like 2Ks overnight just to accumulate points. I think a lot of that nonsense will go away.
I think this could easily hurt the scene as well as help it. So we'll talk about it more. To Anuj's point, Call of Duty World League is a very weird league where they still treat the top rated teams like they're any other Joe Schmo signing up for a game battles tournament.
Like they're an eighth grade junior high guy that's just trying to play COD for the first time. You're treated the same way.
It's very, very weird. No special treatment, I guess. In other news, KnuckleDew signs with Echo Fox for their Street Fighter team. I thought this was interesting news because not that long ago we talked about how Echo Fox cleaned house of a lot of their fighting game community team members. Punk was Punk, Scar, Justin Wong. I mean, he's huge to get rid of. Obviously, they kept in Sonic Fox, of course. They dropped, though, their division manager for the FGC on their part. Taquito's contract just recently was expired. They didn't renew that. I thought they were pretty much done with it, but it looked like maybe they were just trimming down, right? They wanted to keep the big dogs, so now they still have Sonic Fox. KnuckleDew is huge in the street fighting. He used to be, like, world's best until he went away for a little bit when he left Team Liquid, so that's big for Echo Fox. In the Six Invitational 2019, Rainbow Six, G2 continues their absolute dominance as they defeated Empire 3-0, going for their second straight world championship.
And will continue to do so until Pingu leaves G2 and goes somewhere else, which I don't really see G2 letting go of that guy. But for those guys that just want to learn the game and... you know, want to learn maps and just how to get better, I recommend following Pingu. I mean, he's very informative, kind of teaches you as he's playing the game, which is nice. So if you're looking for a good Rainbow Six streamer, that's a good guy to follow.
And one last thing here. The Esports Hall of Fame announced their most recent inductee as legendary Esports player Boxer has now been inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Who makes these judgments? Like, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. He deserves it. But does anyone know how this process works?
For those who don't know, Boxer
is legendary player.
StarCraft player.
But who's making this? Like, who's the committee?
I don't know.
The secret
organization. Do they use like the... you know, college football playoff committee to help them out here? Or...
God, I hope not.
Let me see like, website if they say anything super quick.
Well, like, the announcement seems super random when they come, I guess.
That's what I don't like. So
there's not, like, a ballot list that I see that they're voting off of or who's in contention. Like, you really don't know how they do what they do.
No, and their website, it almost looks like I made it.
It's a picture like of the Pepe meme.
It's esportshall.com. It's literally one page that just has their names listed out. That's it. That's their whole website. It doesn't give you any information.
Even better. I thought there was more to this.
It's no, a live look at Tim.
Like, I wasn't lying. Like, that is literally it. It's just their names listed out, and it says Esports Hall of Fame, and it has PaySafe card as a sponsor up top.
Does
That's
it say
it.
From an undisclosed location?
It might as well, because it gives you no information, which I always thought was weird. Like, I remember when they announced this Esports Hall of Fame, it was like, dang, this is pretty cool. And it just seems so not official. You know, I love the names they put in. You know, I love the names that they're adding.
Fatality and Heaton, and like, there's been great additions to the Esports Hall of Fame. Just kind of curious
how
that whole thing
works. It's
just
weird on how they do it. And it's,
yeah,
I feel like they need to do it, like, partner up with the Esports Awards, you know, that they once a year, you
make
know,
an announcement for inducting somebody or a group of people or however you want to do
give
it.
Give us your nominations and then give us your two inductees a year or something. Because, yes, right now, kind of takes away from the fun of it when you just kind of look on Twitter and you're like, oh, look, Boxer made the Esports Hall of Fame.
They should let the writers do it.
February 19th for...
Writers and podcasters, we should get a vote.
Like the normal ones? Media members can get a vote? Yeah. Every NA player gets in the Hall of Fame.
I vote for Brett for CS.
Then everyone gets in. Everyone. I don't want to say no. I have a hard time saying no, Anoush.
A lot of COD guys wouldn't because of Adderall. We can't let drug users in.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Well, way to end this show on a downer. God, literally.
It's a good time to end it, though, I have to say. We end episode 144 for the second time for the center ring. Man, did this episode go a lot smoother.
This was a good episode. I like this. We should do that every time.
We should always just do the episode twice in a row, man. It sounds great when we've already talked about everything once before. Get that rehearsal run in, you know?
Crisp, clean combos.
I don't think our wives would appreciate it if we spent two nights on the episode or the podcast every week, but they can deal with it. They're just women.
They put up with us already.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Hey, but by the way, that was Tim.
Thank you for our listeners for putting up with us. We definitely appreciate it, whether you listened to the whole thing, if you jumped in between, if you skipped around. I love you all the same. We will be back next week as we talk about the top eight, who is making it for the Katowice Major, who were eliminated, the surprises, what have you. Let us know on Twitter who you have going through at the Center Ring. And we'll talk about it next week. But for Anoush, for Brett, I'm Tim. We'll see ya.